You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for your President's Weekend Edition. Recording on the 15th of February, but it's going to hold for your President's Edition. Let's look at the schedules and what's to come in the second half or the post-All-Star break season. Let's answer some of your questions, and let's do a Points Gained Friday. It's all coming up on Locked On Jazz. Pow! Why, how are you today? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, and geeky numbers. All on Locked On Jazz. When you get in your car, tell your smart device, say the keyword, whether it's Siri or Google or whatever it might be, and say, play podcast Locked On Jazz. And you can do that whenever you get in your car. You can also do it with your smart speakers at home. All right, I want to walk through some schedule things. Dell Demps got fired. We'll touch on that for a second and why that's relevant to the Utah Jazz in some ways. And we'll talk as well about just kind of what to expect and then hit on some of any of your questions that have come in. I just threw out a tweet about that. All right, so Dell Demps got fired today by the New Orleans Pelicans. This, I think, explains a lot of what happened at the trade deadline. The murmur around the league was that New Orleans really was not interested in making a deal. I talked to some teams who I thought had deals that they could make. And when I brought that up, like, do you think you could do that? Their answer was, do you think they would do it? Why don't you get them to activate? So what my summation here, and I haven't read anything today, so if this is out there, then I apologize. But my guess would be that what's happened here is that you have a ownership group with new ownership with Mrs. Benson taking over that decided, you know what, we're going to have somebody else make that decision. Now, is it going to be Danny Ferry, who's been the advisor there? I don't know what it's going to be. The Bensons don't really have great basketball background, so it's not clear where they're going to go. But what is clear to me is that part of the reason the Drew Holiday didn't get moved and the Anthony Davis didn't get moved, that they weren't going to make a major move, is they wanted somebody else to make the decision for where that franchise is going. And Dell Demps was just not going to be the guy. At least that was the decision made today. And I think if you had any chance that you might be firing Dell Demps, you can't have him be the one who's pulling off that deal. Right? That makes a heck of a lot of sense. So that's, I think, what prevented that deal from getting done. Which is also interesting is whoever takes over, what their next step is. The Benson kind of feeling was, well, we're not going to tank or rebuild or do something like that. Well, that might be the logical right thing to do, which at that point, Drew Holiday comes back on the board. There were rumors that Drew Holiday was going to want out of there. Never really came to fruition. He was just left with that one quote about, you know, that's 95% of the reason that I re-signed was Anthony Davis. But is this going to mean that Drew Holiday suddenly becomes available in the offseason in a trade package? Now, that's not from a Jazz standpoint. It's much harder for the Jazz to go make that deal now than it was prior because all of their expiring contracts then are free agents. So you would probably at that point be trading him into cap space, if that makes any sense. So anyway, that's how that impacts the Jazz. That's kind of what we thought was going to take place. There was a little murmurs about that. If you listen to the morning show this morning, I kind of alluded to it. Let's talk about what we have coming up here in the final stretch of the season. The two teams in the Western Conference that are superior to the Jazz, not named the Warriors, right? So not named the Warriors, are the Denver Nuggets and the Oklahoma City Thunder. And one of the reasons why is because both they've won a lot of games. They deserve, I'm not trying to diminish what they've done. Oklahoma City's five games ahead of the Jazz, Denver's seven, is because their schedule has been incredibly soft. And now for both Denver and Oklahoma City, it comes to roost. If you we'll dig more into this. I'll do my regular breakdown where we put the games in 80 to, you know, half to wins, which are 80, likely to wins, pick'ems, likely to lose, gonna lose, kind of category of things, and anticipate how the season will play out, and then be able to monitor it as it takes place. But Denver and Oklahoma City only play two games the remainder of the season against teams that I would say are tanking. Only two. Contrast that to the Utah Jazz, who will come out with a tough game against Oklahoma City, Dallas Clippers, Denver, Milwaukee, very tough, but then back-to-back against New Orleans, Memphis, who's been playing hard, but and maybe trying to get a win, but let's say is not the same team, so we'll put them in the tanking category. Then has a Phoenix, that's four. Then has a New York, that's five. Has an Atlanta, that's six. Has a Chicago, that's seven. Has another Phoenix, that's eight. Has another Phoenix, that's nine. And who knows what happens by the time we get to the Clippers in Sacramento late in the season. The Jazz play nine games the rest of the way against teams that in my mind are probably not particularly worried about winning. Washington, three games out. We play them twice in the remainder of the season, the rest of the way, and I suspect they'll still be interested in winning because they're right now three games out, but maybe not. It could go up to as many as 11. Then I looked at hard road games. Denver and Oklahoma City have 10 hard road games left. Games where they may or may not be favored, and if they are favored, they're favored by one ball bounce of a rim. Right? Like, if you're favored, you're not favored by more than three. 10 of those. The Jazz play four. I don't suspect that the Jazz catch either of those teams, but it's not done. If you look at what ESPN, Basketball Reference, and 538 are projecting, they're all projecting the Jazz at 49 wins. That means the Jazz lose eight more games the rest of the way. I could easily see if the Jazz stay healthy and come out inspired that they only lose six or seven and then they get to 50-51 wins. And projection systems have Oklahoma City right in that range except for the 538 has them at 54. They're really playing very well. Though that loss the other night was not good. But they're really playing very well. And Denver's really good. Denver's going to be a 53 or 54 win team unless they maybe are that good because they've played such a soft schedule. That's the one thing that I would point out. I'm utterly convinced after 57 games that both Denver and Oklahoma City are very good. But is that just because they've played such an easy schedule they've bought in? On the other end, they have won a lot of good basketball games. I mean, Denver's 7-1 in division. So how does the rest of the whole thing break out? The Rockets, who are sitting right behind the Jazz and Portland, or right ahead of the Jazz at fifth spot, one game ahead, they play seven games against tanking teams and seven hard road games. They're going to be right around 48, 49, 50. Portland, who's two games ahead of the Jazz off a great win against the Warriors, has seven tanking games and seven hard road games. They're going to be at 48, 49, 40 to 50. And the Spurs have six tanking games and only four hard road games. So the Jazz and the Spurs have only four hard road games. Rockets and Blazers have seven. Denver and Oklahoma City have 10. Tanking teams, the Jazz play nine, the Rockets and Blazers play seven, the Spurs play six, Denver and OKC play two. This is going to get just about as close as we thought. When the season started, my guess was the Jazz were going to win 52 games and be the second seed because everybody else was going to conglomerate into that mesh of teams. Houston, second year with Chris Paul, all sorts of other reasons. And it's going to be close. Denver will probably be ahead of that 52, and the Jazz won't quite get there. Maybe. Still could. But that's it's amazing how the twists and the turns, and I've never had a season which I think has been so dictated by scheduling. Some of your questions, as well as points gained coming up. Remember, Locked On NBA is still churning around for you there every day. Sam Amick of The Athletic, Trevor Booker joining us as well. And the Ben Golliver of The Washington Post joins throughout the week. Locked On NBA, subscribe now on Spotify, Google Podcasts, or on iTunes. Today's show is brought to you by InterCap Lending. If you are looking to do a refi or need a mortgage, InterCap Lending is an incredible growing company. I got a great email about how well things were going over at InterCap the other day. It just made me happy because I do feel as though the Locked On Jazz family is a little bit a part of this. You know, when I get an email from Brock that says, I hope he doesn't mind me sharing this, 2019 is setting up perfectly. We've hired 80 new employees in the last 90 days. The momentum is continuing to build. Thanks for the continued support in our growth. How great is that? He also said, go Jazz. I still feel like they go 19-8 over the home stretch and finish at 50 wins, which is pretty much that I agree with him. But isn't that great? Like to have a company, Josh Romney brought them back to Utah, and now they're a major employer in our state. It's so cool. Why are people going to InterCap Lending? Because they get deals done. Because as a lender who's independent and on their own, they can do things. And their flexibility with the way they view technology has been fabulous. And that, to me, is what has jumped out to me more than anything else. Their can-do attitude as well as what they've done with their app, where they've embraced change. They're hyper-responsive. They increase the borrower experience there. Check it out at their app, at the InterCap Lending app. And Steve Carter's there to help you. Tell them you were Locked On Jazz. They'll give you the corporate rate. 385-885-28. That's 385-885-28. InterCap Lending. They service their own loans. If you have their direct lender, so if you might have a difficult loan, like you've got other business assets, multiple properties, they can really help you out. InterCap Lending, 385-885-28. That's InterCap Lending, NMLS number 190465. For more information, visit intercaplending.com. Another Utah company that's on fire is Homey. Homey is revolutionizing the real estate world right now. Why? Well, because the first thing you've got to ask yourself is why is the economics of the real estate model exactly the same as what it was before? Does that make any sense? I don't know. It's up to you. You decide this. But I'm going to tell you what. When you can save huge amounts of money with Homey, why wouldn't you? Homey has got it set up for you so that you have an opening. And let me back up. Let me back up a second. In the 2018 market, Homey sold homes in 14 days versus the market size at 16. Homey sold the median price at $35,000, higher than the market average in Utah. Homey is building a one-stop shop, making the whole process for customers more advantageous financially, and they're supporting you with your whole team. That's what Homey was built for. Why the 6% commission that everything has? There's no real explanation for why you would want to do that and have that. And instead, Homey is setting up, you start with $199 to list your house and $1,500 to close. You can save, depending on the amount of the house, you save just tremendous amounts of money. So, learn more about Homey by texting LOCK, LOCKE, to 88588. That's LOCK to 88588. I want to go to questions first. I haven't turned on my mentions in so long, and I'm turning them on right now. So let me see how this works. I might have people telling me all sorts of things. Let's see. Are there any questions that have come in? There are some questions that have come in. Our probable first round matchups. Who's our best matchup? I have no idea. Here's the probability of our first round matchups. So if you look at ESPN's BPI, Basketball Reference, and 538, they're all very clear. Denver is the 2 seed. They all kind of agree Oklahoma City's the 3 seed. They have Utah at 49, 48, and 49 wins across the board, which puts them as the 4 seed in most of the models, except for Basketball Reference has the Jazz as the 5 seed. And they have Houston and Portland tied at 48 in one model. Portland a game and a half ahead of Houston in the model, and Houston a game ahead of Portland in the other model, tied with Utah. So, and then San Antonio is at 46, 46, 45. Clippers are at 44, 44, 43. And actually, Sacramento and LA are way off. So, it feels as though right now the Jazz will be in the 4-5 matchup playing either Portland or Houston. I don't really like either of those matchups, though I don't know if I want to play Oklahoma City again. Maybe Portland because of their playoff scars and you can kind of get used to it, but Dame kind of has the Jazz figured out, but Harden is just Harden with Capella healthy and Chris Paul with days off. I think I'd rather play Portland. I'd rather go to Portland too. I like Terry. I like both those coaches, so they'd be fun to interview. So I'd rather go to Portland. But I don't know. I think we have a better chance to beat Portland and Houston. I don't like either of those. Here's what's really interesting. In some ways, if we're going to be the 5 seed, and you know, this might be a laughable comment, I might rather be the 7 seed. So Oklahoma City is just way better than they were last year. Has played us in the playoffs, knows who we are. Houston has Harden. Portland feels like they have our number a little bit. Denver hasn't been in a playoff series, doesn't have that experience. It's all new to them. You go on the road, you go grab one in their building right out of the chute. And maybe in some weird ways, I think that's the best playoff matchup. But I don't think any of those are very good playoff matchups. And I think that's going to be difficult. From Adam, we saw against the Spurs, Quinn barely played Faves and Rudy together. He even started the second half with Jay. Do you think there's a point where Derek just becomes the backup center full-time? No. Only because of respect to Derek. But I do see, basically, that our primary five is Jay. It's the lineup we play the most. Though we've changed a little bit. You know, that first substitution, Kyle's now in with Jay. So the Jay, Joe Ingles, Ricky Rubio, Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert lineup is not playing as much as it was together. But I do think our primary lineup is that group. Rubio, Donovan, Ingles, Jay Crowder, Rudy Gobert. That's our five. It has not played as much together recently because the substitution pattern brings Kyle Korver and Jay Crowder in together. And I think our primary lineup is Jay Crowder and Rudy Gobert together, if that is and that what Derek and Rudy are at this point to me are 10 minutes of getting you through the game, just using your players to their best ability, excuse the sneeze. And Rudy and Derek play such great defense together that that's the best ability of the team, but they're only playing 10 minutes together. Right now, and when they are on the floor together, it happens to be the first 5 minutes of the first and the first 5 minutes of the third, unless the lineup is really bad or the Spurs play a triangle in two. And so I just view them no differently if they were the middle 5 minutes of the first and third or something of that nature. When Rudy and Jay are on the floor together, we're plus 8.3. That lineup I mentioned that has Joe Ingles with Jay Crowder has played 726 possession is plus 14.3. The lineup where Korver comes in with Jay Crowder and plays briefly with Rubio has actually been really poor. It's minus 9.6, interestingly. So we'll see over time how that plays out. The other lineup, Donovan Mitchell, Royce O'Neal, Joe Ingles, Jay Crowder, and Rudy Gobert. So Royce in for Rubio has been very good. And the lineup that has Royce in for Ingles with Donovan has not been very good with Jay. But overall, we're plus 8.3 with that lineup. When Favors and Gobert are on the floor together, this is using cleaning the glass, which eliminates blowout time. When Favors and Gobert are on the floor together, we're even. And we're in the 9th percentile offensively. We just cannot score the basketball well when those two players are on the floor together. We're in the 9th percentile overall offensively. It's just no spacing. And Rubio's not a good enough shooter. But defensively, they're great. Donovan's amazing January seemed to coincide with Rubio's absence. Seems Donovan's more engaged and assertive with the ball in his hands. Probably true. Now, remember that Donovan's amazing January did not coincide with an offensive jump by the Jazz. Right? Like, that, I think, is an important reminder here to look at. That if we were to, let's see, I cannot run, that would take some time. I don't have the capability of running this exactly as we wanted. But if here, let's just play this game for a second. I think we have to eliminate, this is a little misleading because, so Donovan, and if we take Donovan and Ricky on the floor together, we're now taking all of the minutes where they're on the floor with Favors and Gobert. And that's difficult because that lineup doesn't really work, right? We've just talked about that offensively. So if you look at their other lineups, the offense is in the 54th percentile, so middle of the pack offense. When it has the starting lineup, it's in the 14th. The minute Crowder comes in the game, it's in the 73rd percentile. When it's with Royce and Jay, it's in the 35th percentile. When it's with Korver and Jay, it's in the 23rd percentile. And when it's with Rubio, Donovan, Ingles, Crowder, and Favors, it's in the 91st percentile. So, interesting. That lineup works with either Derek or Ricky there. Now, if we were to take Donovan on the court and Ricky off the court, we are in the 54th percentile, but remember we had, it's a little misleading, as I said, because you have all those lineup minutes with Favors and Gobert. You have very limited here, but with the offense with Donovan on and Ricky off, you're in the 31st percentile. So the offense is considerably less good. It struggles. It's in the 15th percentile when on the floor with Rudy and Derek. And when on the floor with Jay and Rudy in the primary, one is in the 46th percentile and one is great. The lineup of Donovan Mitchell, Royce O'Neal, Joe Ingles, Jay Crowder, and Rudy Gobert has played 119 possessions together and been insane. It's worth digging into who that was against. Good questions. Really good questions. How do the does Malcolm Brogdon potentially fit with the Jazz? What's his points gained? Will Milwaukee need to re-sign Middleton, others, and does that overpaying Brogdon make sense in an offer sheet to him? I think it does. My guess is that they would let go of Bledsoe instead of Brogdon. I got asked by someone this year what I thought of Bledsoe or Brogdon, and my answer was, I probably like Brogdon better, but why do I think of Brogdon for the Jazz? Well, why would they do it? So Brogdon is a plus 1.3 points gained. Bledsoe is a 0.7. It is an interesting scenario there where you can maybe push Milwaukee a little bit, who's going to have some financial difficulties. Brogdon is a 51% from the field and 41% from three. The other thing is if you can push Brogdon, there's a chance that that opens up Nikola Mirotic, right? Mirotic will be a free agent out of Milwaukee. They might want to re-sign him. And if you are pushing the Brogdon contract higher than they like, then maybe they have to let Bledsoe go, which you may or may not be interested, but you also might force another player out of there, in this case being Mirotic. Brogdon has cooled off a little bit recently. It's worth noting on that over the last 10 games. We'll do more points gained in a second. Who deserves to be an all-star more, the Mudslide Cookie or Rudy Gobert? In all seriousness, with Anthony Davis being hurt, any chance Rudy would replace him in the all-star weekend? I think I saw an Instagram post of Rudy looking out to the ocean at the beach, and I think I might consider it a sign of him looking to the future and seeing forward and not necessarily doing that. Matt wants to know, why don't we play Gobert, Ingles, Korver, O'Neal, and Mitchell? We've been playing Royce at the four. Let's go look it up in a second. When we come back, we'll look and see how that is, plus look at points gained. Today's show is brought to you in part by my friends at Murdoch Hyundai. If you're shopping for a car and looking for a car right now, and Hyundai's not on your list, ask yourself why. Because the dollar value the features you can get for the dollar value are incredible at Murdoch Hyundai. And I'd love for you to check out Murdoch, at least stop by their lot and see whether or not they have something for you. Because it's February and you should love your vehicle. difficult in this Valentine's Day period of time. They've got amazing deals right now going on at Murdoch Hyundai. But more importantly, you have the Murdoch 90 years with Utahns and their connection, the Murdoch guarantee of a no-regrets experience, and then the deals. The 2019 Elantra is only $13,990, and I love the North American utility vehicle of the year, the Hyundai Kona, the little tiny Subaru Crosstrek-esque car for only $259 a month. They always come with America's best warranty, a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain Hyundai assurance. As always, buy with no regrets. 5-day exchange policy and car washes for life. MurdochHyundai.com. All right, the question was, why don't we play? It would be Mitchell is the one, O'Neill, Korver, Ingles, and Gobert. Let's take a look. Let's see if we've done it. These are the wonderful things we can do with modern technology. So that is, I think we've seen this much more. Royce O'Neal has been playing the four at a much higher level. And now the lineup you gave me just there has both Korver and Ingles together. That is not much of a defensive lineup, I would point out. Though Joe's done, you know, always done a pretty good job. By the way, if you didn't hear the Ingles came out, announced that one of their boy, their twin boy, their son is autistic. I thought their announcement was beautiful. Just all the support in the world to them. Obviously, many of our close friends, as I'm sure yours have been through this. It's not an easy road. And I just wanted to send all the support on behalf of the Locked On Jazz family to Joe and his family. You are right. We have only played five possessions all season long with that lineup. I think the reason is defensively it might scuffle a little bit. Rebounding-wise, it might scuffle a little bit. But they have only played five possessions together all year. Pack ratings for D'Angelo Russell and Justice Winslow. D'Angelo Russell, who I, by the way, called it, told you at the beginning of the year was the most intriguing player to me in the league. Just felt like something had changed about who he was as a player, but still goes to the line so rarely and shoots at the rim so lightly. He's actually still a negative 0.9 pack player. His free throw rate is 4.5% of his possessions at the free throw line. Alan Crabb, who is like the world's most jump shooting, non-driving, goes to the free throw line more than D'Angelo Russell. So D'Angelo Russell still isn't I think this is a sustainable nor an efficient way. He is an all-star because he's in the Eastern Conference. Justice Winslow is a minus 1.3 pack and has never been able to be a good offensive player. He's gone to the free throw line less and less, doesn't shoot a lot of threes. So two very interesting players that are low on the pack scale. I like, or on the points gain scale. I like when people ask these questions because then it gets me to the guys you want. Jazz fans trying to figure out how to get Drew Holiday, myself included. Would that be a realistic move to make happen? Would it even worth it? It will be a very, very difficult move in the offseason. We don't have any contracts to move. That was by, you know, we had $30 million of contracts that could move at, or even a little more, at the trade deadline. But when they become free agents, you can no longer move them. So the move we would make now is taking Drew Holiday into cap space for picks, which might be worth it. What about Julius Randle in the offseason? Power forward signing. Probably not going to get paid by New Orleans. He's really interesting. He doesn't bring the spacing you'd expect. You'd have to ask whether or not you think he's better than Derek. He would probably cost more than Derek would if you picked up Derek's option. His points gained is 1.8, which is really good. Derek's points gained, they're very different players, is 0.9. But that would be your decision. Are you willing to play Julius Randle more money than you paid that you have Derek Favors on an option for? Favors, obviously, despite all of his efforts and his work, really has not materialized to be any type of a three-point shooter, and nor does any team in the world fear him sitting out there. And Julius Randle is pretty similar. He's making 34%, but he takes the same rate as is taken by Derek Favors. All right, let me just give you a quick rundown on points gained and who's leading, who's not, where everybody sits as we head to the All-Star game. Our points gained leader is still Steph Curry. Number two is James Harden at 3.7. This means that James Harden, in the 29 scoring opportunities he uses a night, scores 3.7 points more than the average player in the league on a given night. Steph Curry is a 4.4. By the way, why is Steph Curry not an MVP candidate? His team has the best record. He's averaging 29.5 and 5. He's the best offensive player on that team. He's impacting that team the most offensively, and he's played 8 fewer games than Harden and Adetokounmpo. Adetokounmpo is a 3.3. Durant is a 3.0. Rudy Gobert is the 5th most impactful offensive player in the NBA at 2.6. John Collins, 2.3. Clint Capella, 2.3. Karl-Anthony Towns, 2.1. Kawhi Leonard, 2.1. Danilo Gallinari at 2. Montrezl Harrell at 1.9. DeAndre Jordan, 1.9. Centers that roll to the basket and dunk are valuable. Sabonis, 1.9. Paul George, 1.9. Julius Randle, 1.8. We just talked about that. That's really high, 1.8. Kyrie, 1.7. Anthony Davis, 1.7. LeBron, 1.7. Jonas Valanciunas, 1.6. Tobias Harris, Philadelphia, now 1.6. Blake Griffin, 1.6. Who are the lowest impact offensive players in the league? Russell Westbrook, minus 3.4. Andrew Wiggins, minus 2.9. Kevin Knox, minus 2.5. Colin Sexton, rookie, minus 2.1. Frank Ntilikina, minus 2.0. Donovan Mitchell, minus 1.9. Not having a very efficient season. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, minus 1.9. Chris Dunn, minus 1.4. Josh Jackson, minus 1.6. Jonathan Smith, minus 1.5. Lonzo Ball, Tyreek Evans, Victor Oladipo. Interesting, maybe that's why they haven't struggled as much without him. Avery Bradley, J.J. Barea, DeMar DeRozan, Goran Dragic, Josh Okogie, and Mario Hezonja. Over the last 10 games, who's the hottest player in the league? Paul George, 5.5. Karl-Anthony Towns, a 5.2. Giannis, then Andre Drummond, who's not usually very positive. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Marcus Morris in Boston, James Harden, Malik Beasley in Denver, J.J. Redick, Jimmy Butler, Danilo Gallinari, Rudy Gobert, CeeDee Osman, Myers Leonard, Jahlil Okafor for New Orleans, Bradley Beal, Reggie Jackson playing efficient for Detroit. That doesn't happen very often. Dennis Schroeder for Oklahoma City. That doesn't happen very often. Who's on the low end? Donovan Mitchell is the, over the last 10 games, I didn't know this. I just read this for the first time. No, take it back. Andrew Wiggins over the last 10 games, minus 5.4. And then Donovan Mitchell is the least efficient player. Kevin Knox. Tyler Johnson in Phoenix. Javon Carter playing more in Memphis. Josh Okogie, Colin Sexton, the rookies all hitting a wall. Bogdan Bogdanovic in Sacramento really struggling, minus 2.8. Russell Westbrook, minus 2.7. Harrison Barnes, DeMar DeRozan, Shelvin Mack, Dennis Smith, Chris Dunn, Lonnie Walker all struggling as well. That is your Locked On Jazz today. Have a great one. Thanks very much. Now go tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On NBA.